Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, brought to you by Campbell's new chunky spicy soup. It's time to get fired up. I'm your host, Wen Wu. Only one more game left in the season. Only two more reaction podcasts. You're listening to one of them right now, left on the Raptor show. This was a game that was clearly played by two teams with very different motivations. Not to say the Raptors mailed it in or anything like that, but I think it was pretty clear. The Heat are sharp. They're focused. They're ready to go ahead into the playoffs. They came in, took care of business, very professional style effort, led, you know, basically from start to finish. They kind of won every single quarter and just kept pushing the lead ahead and ahead. They took an 11-point lead after the first quarter, and they just, again, kept building on it for a Heat team that won 125-103 against Toronto versus a Raptors side that, like, you know, didn't look that cohesive, didn't get much of their offense to go. I thought the Heat did a really good job defensively against the Raptors. Biggest difference in this game was just how much the Raptors struggled to get into the paint for Miami versus how easily the Heat were able to impose their size in the middle and just getting into the lane, whether that was off the dribble, whether that was off post-ups. They just did an amazing job of touching the paint, and that's also why they made so many more threes. It's one of the big differences in this game, too, is that the Heat shot 17 of 41 from three, which is really good. Everybody from the starting five hit a three, which means, yes, Bam Adebayo also hit a three, which, the whole Heat team is rolling. And the fact that they shot 17 of 41 from three is even more impressive by the fact that all five starters made a three. Kevin Love made two threes. Haywood Highsmith made a three. DeLon Wright made a three. Jaime Jaquez made two threes off the bench. That means there were nine players for the Heat who made at least one three. And it just shows you the efficiency that they played with. And it, again, when you touch the paint that much, you have a really easy time to generate great looks. And the Heat finished with 37 assists. Toronto obviously likes to move the ball as well. But Miami's, I thought, defensively just made it really difficult for the likes of Gary, who struggled in this game. He's had a strong finish this season in the last couple of games here. I mean, I'll give him a little bit of, like, benefit of the doubt because he was questionable for this game before deciding to play anyway, but he was 3 of 13, settled for some contested shots, was forced into a lot of contested shots because Miami's defense was strong, but I didn't think Quickly had the same impact that he's had the last couple of games. I thought that he did a really good job of swarming Quickly. And then Grady, you know, the Heat did a really good job of also, like, just shutting down what he does as well. The Raptors, you know, do a lot of actions where they sort of have, you know, small pick and rolls, or they'll have their guards and wings sort of split off each other off the ball, and the Heat did a really good job of communicating all of those. Basically, I'm just saying that the Heat play defense and the Raptors, like, defensively are nowhere close to where they are. The only guy on the Raptors who really performed well offensively, and he performed spectacularly offensively, is RJ Barrett, who, despite all the other trouble that the rest of the team had in terms of getting to the cup, RJ was consistently there at the basket, and also not just getting there, but finishing. I mean, RJ tonight finished with 35 points on 13 of 18 shooting, goes 8 of 10 from the foul line, which almost is even better than the 13 of 18 shooting because he's been off from free throws. And to see him go to the foul line that many times and to see him, like, knock down 8 for 10 is a really good sign. He had been hovering at or even below 60% as a Raptor. And it's 35 points in 33 minutes, and he was 13 of 18 from the field, which, you know, if you subtract the 1 of 4 from 3, that means he was 12 of 14 from 2. And it was all exclusively, like, paint looks and very much at the rim looks. He did a great job with that. I think the starting five, even despite the fact that Miami, you know, played really well, I think the starting five was actually competitive enough. It was really the second unit that came in that you really started to see, like, just a massive dip in form. First off, you saw Ochai Agbaji come off the bench, which I thought was a bit surprising in this case. I mean, I think you probably would have preferred to see more defense with the starting group, but at the same time, Grady has outplayed him, and so you see Grady in the starting group. I think that obviously hurts your defense when you're going with Ochai off the bench versus Grady, but at the same time, like, it doesn't necessarily matter as much. But I think the guys who are really dragging down the second unit, Malik Williams, I didn't see that much from Javon Freeman Liberty either, even though he was only a minus six. And Bruce Brown had a terrible plus minus as well, but I actually thought he actually played his role really well and did a good job and was pretty efficient overall. 14 points, 5 of 6 from the field, knocked down 2 threes. There was a stretch there in the second quarter where, like, Bruce Brown was creating most of the offense, which is a grim sentence to say in any circumstance. But in any case, I don't want to blame it all on Malik Williams, but this man did not make a single positive play in his time out there and just looked very, very much overwhelmed against, you know, not the same team because, you know, he was playing for Miami's G League team, which isn't even anywhere near Miami. It's in Sioux Falls. It's like as opposite to Miami as you could possibly get as Sioux Falls. But still, he just looked so overwhelmed and guys were just going at him. Kevin Love was knocking down threes against him and Jaime Hawkins Jr. was driving around him for layups and, you know, he was getting open looks and he was getting bricked, bricking those shots and getting blocked, stuff like that. So whatever. The second unit didn't really sustain. Meanwhile, the Heat second unit came in and really played well. They had difference makers coming off that bench. Kevin Love always plays really solid, kind of plays like a Kelly Olynyk style role, except way more of a three-point shooting threat. Kelly can shoot, but he just doesn't seem nearly as trigger happy as somebody like Kevin. But I thought, hey, with Highsmith was really solid off the Heat's bench, and that's a really good developmental story for Miami to get a guy like that who, you know, is a competitive 3-and-D type of player who can really, you know, make a big impact at, like he did tonight, plus 23 in 26 minutes, did a really good job defensively and also made some strong plays offensively. And then Jaime Hawkins Jr., who, man, I mean, you know, I he's had like a pretty good rookie season overall. Like, I think he should probably make one of the all rookie teams. And I think he really started the year well. Then he cooled off a little bit. Some of that had to do with the threes, but he's got a really good game where he can like drive in, touch the paint. And then, you know, he's a rookie, I mean, he's an older rookie, but he's got a lot of subtle pump fakes and like, stop and goes. He really plays a cerebral game in addition to the fact that he also has a lot of hops. I mean, he was in the dunk contest and he did do a dunk where he put on a snapback and it fell off as he dunked it. Like, I don't know if that was like a Kelly Olynyk tribute or whatever, but it was massively underwhelming. But in any case, Jaime Hawkins Jr. has the type of hops to even be in a dunk contest. So you combine the footwork, the sort of like, you know, finesse game, and you also hit, the high highs of a good leaper like that. I mean, he's tough, man. I mean, he had a great game. I mean, he was arguably the player of the game. 20 points, 4 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals, a block. I would say arguably because obviously RJ played so well, but like, I mean, him and Hawkins both were just going to the basket over and over and over again. And when Hawkins touched the paint too, the Heat were just so unselfish. They moved the ball beautifully. Like, man, very few people on the Heat like dribble the ball that much and are like too selfish in getting to their shots. Like, a lot of these Heat players could have shot more. Like, Jimmy Butler probably starts and finishes the whole conversation when you really think about it, because I mean, the fact that Jimmy Butler took only 7 shots in 29 minutes, and of course he was super efficient. He got 14 points off those 7 shots. He made 2 threes, made 2 free throws as well, and had 7 assists, no turnovers. But like, the fact that Jimmy Butler is just content to play like connector on a game like this and just be really, you know, just sacrifice his offense despite how good we know Jimmy Butler to be, like, that kind of sets the tone for the whole team and everyone is moving it around. Like, you would never come into this game expecting Nikola Jovic to be the shot attempt leader for the whole entire Heat team, let alone just for the starters. And I mean, he was really good though, and I thought Jovic was a real difference maker in this one. You know, it's not a coincidence that every big wing plays against the Raptors and has a good game. You know, like, that's where the Raptors are really, really weak. And I thought Jovic was able to use his length, take it to the cup, also have the outside game. But I thought he established the inside game first, and then he started taking the threes as well. But he was efficient, 22 points, 9 of 18 shooting, 4 of 10 from three. You know, 6'9", 6'10", type of guy who can really stretch it, hit the three, but also can make a couple moves to the basket. He's actually, like, exactly the type of player that the Raptors could really use in their system. Not to say that I'm fawning so much over Nikola Jovic, but like, that style of player really could really work. And of course, you know, the other guys like Bam, mostly screening, you know, playing pick and roll, all that kind of stuff. You know, in the moments that he was involved, he did a good job of scoring. In terms of bad matchups for Kelly Olynyk, I think Bam Adebayo is high up the list in terms of just the quickness and athleticism to match, you know, Kelly, who isn't quick or athletic, but he, at the same time, he's pretty mobile for and pretty light on his feet for a 5. He's basically a 4 playing as a 5. But Bam is a guy who literally can guard anybody. So, you know, I thought the physicality was there. And then offensively, Bam probably could have dominated the offensive glass more if the Heat missed more shots, to be honest. There weren't that many offensive rebounds when the other team makes a lot of shots. But, you know, I thought Bam could just outmaneuver Kelly a lot of times and just be a step ahead of him. And, of course, the two-man game that he has with a Jimmy Butler, with a Tyler Hero, these guys have played together for so many years, made so many playoff runs. And, you know, especially when you make playoff runs together too, like the type of practices you get in the playoffs versus like your day-to-day, for a veteran team like the Heat, I don't even know how often they practice. They probably do a lot anyway, but still, like, all the reps and recognition, like, it is just totally night and day. You compare that to the Raptors product, which is like haphazard, kind of like made up on the fly this season. You know, they're obviously running out the string, but you know, they still have a lot of players that they want to play together. Like, you know, the starting five tonight: Kelly Olynyk, Gary Trent Jr., RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickly, Grady Dick. Like, at least four of those guys will be back next year, if not all five with Gary. And the other guys getting minutes in their rotation are like Ochai, who's the next, you know, highest minutes player in 25 coming off the bench. He's also gonna be here next year. So, like, there are, like, you can't just excuse the whole thing, but at the same time, like, there is such a big gap in terms of just like the execution and the experience that the Heat have with each other. Having said that, though, I also feel like very strongly, and this is not a hot take at all, because what did Eric Spoelstra sign, like an $80 million contract or whatever? Like, he's worth every single penny. You also see every single player that comes into the game for Miami plays in the exact style and image and mold of what they should be doing. They play selflessly, and they play, you know, Eric Spoelstra basketball. Like, this is, and he's done it with so many groups over the years. Like, this man was making it work with, like, James Johnson, Justice Winslow, and, you know, I don't even know, Deion Waiters. This guy was making it work with, like, Tyler Johnson. This guy was making it work with, like, Josh McRoberts. This guy was making it work with, like, you know, all sorts of different lineups over the years. And you see this one, it's a classic Heat lineup. But at the same time, like, they come in the game and they immediately play the style that the Heat demand to. They're on the ball, they're physical, they force you into probably having to foul them. And I thought the Heat were by far the more physical team tonight. Only time you saw the Raptors even remotely match the physicality was the third quarter, and it was only for stretches as well. And then, yeah, they play unselfishly offensively. Like, they have a really good system. They move the ball well. You know, they touch the paint, but nobody's really taking one-on-one opportunities. They could. Like, again, they could. Like, Tyler Hero could really look to attack one-on-one a lot more, play a lot of pick and roll. But he doesn't necessarily always have to do that because he wants to play in the team scheme. You know, Jimmy Butler, same kind of deal. But they don't need to, right? They could have beat the Raptors, like, three or four different ways tonight, to be honest. But they play the right way each time. And they're not, like, an overwhelming team. Like, they're, even having said all this, they're still, what, like, in the play-in race right now, potentially trying to get out of it. They're 45-36, which is a good record. Like, they'll beat the Raptors on Sunday, too. So they'll finish 10 games over 500. But, like, you know, it's not a dominant team. But at the same time, like, they make the most out of it. And honestly, whoever they plug into their system ends up, like, just fitting in. Like, you know, Caleb Martin wasn't, like, that much before going to Miami. Like, you know, Haywood Highsmith is just, like, a two-way guy that they've, like, worked into becoming a really productive player. Like, I would actually really love to see a Haywood Highsmith come on the Raptors and take his skill set there. Delon Wright has been, you know, on many different stops, and now he finally goes to Miami to follow in his footsteps of Darrell Wright, who, by the way, I think one of the sweetest stories I remember, and it's such a minor detail, but in Game 7 when the Raptors beat the Heat in 2016, again, that was a team that Eric Spoelstra was making it work with, like, who was even on that team? Amari Stoudemire was on that team, Hassan Whiteside, McRoberts, you know, just a whole bunch, you know, Goran Dragic, the traitor, et cetera, Mr. High Ambitions. At the very end of that series, Delon Wright, who was a rookie, got into play the game because Kyle Lowry had such an amazing, he had like 35, made like seven threes, like Mike Breen said, bang, and his voice cracked, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was just such a good moment. And one of Kyle's high moments before the championship was that Game 7 against Miami. Because Kyle went off to such a degree, because the Raptors were going to go to the conference finals for the first time in their franchise history, that game at the end was out of reach, and both teams emptied their benches. And Miami put on Darrell Wright, and the Raptors put on Delon Wright. And there's a big age gap between those two. You know, like, Darrell Wright's long been out the league and stuff like that, too. But it was just, I think it was the one time ever that the two Wright brothers played each other, and it was only for a minute in the end of the, a game seven. And that was really sweet. But in any case, DeLon Wright comes back, goes to Miami now. And he comes in and he plays immediately the right way. Jaime Hawkins Jr. is a rookie. And he comes in and has a big impact. Like, you know, that's the thing. Like, when you establish that culture, you are able to, and you have a clear identity, you are able to give clear directives to players. And if they follow them, they stay. If they don't follow them, they go. And that's how you build the strength of a program. And the Raptors had that to some degree as well. Like, I would never say the Raptors were outside of, like, you know, the championship years or the year afterwards, they weren't as tactically adept as what the Heat are right now, especially offensively. But I think, you do see the fact that they have this really, really recognizable style and sustainable style. They just bring players in and they just fit and they go. And it's, you know, it's they can even rely on the fact that, of course, they're Miami. They can sign big free agents. Like, I mean, they signed Jimmy Butler, and that's, you know, more than anything else, their most important player. But they also are able to draft even, you know, later, you know, lottery picks like Bam, who was like 13, and Tyler Herro was like 14. Like, those guys are maximized to a huge degree, to the point where Bam's an all-star, and Tyler Herro is not a near all-star, but like a really, really good player. But like, they are able to find like spare parts to it and plug them into their system, like a Haywood Highsmith, and actually make them contributors. Meanwhile, the Raptors, like, I think, you know, that's what you're hoping to work towards, right? You're hoping to work to get to that point where you can be like that. And I think, you know, number one, like, this is year one of the Raptors project. You know, Miami, like, Eric Spoelstra's been there for like, what, 20 years? Like, seriously, like, he's been there a long, long time, right? So there's that aspect. But I also think the other aspect is just like, what is the Raptors' identity going to be? Like, I think, for example, like, the Raptors clearly want to do all these innovative things offensively. You know, we had a really great conversation with Joe Wolfson about this. Joe Wolfson, who, by the way, has a distinction now to go down as the final ever guest of the Raptors show. But in any case, Joe Wolfson talked about it, and he wrote a really great piece about how offensive, efficiency continues to improve around the league, even though three-point rate and pace, the two kind of like, you know, inefficiencies, or basically like two like glitches that you could like spam to improve your offense. And that's something that, you know, if you shoot more threes, you play faster. Like, that's sort of been universally true around the league in terms of, that's a universal remedy for better offense. Those have plateaued over the years, as in basically teams have figured it out. Like, okay, we're supposed to do this, but still offensive efficiency is improving because they're playing less pick and roll now. And they're playing a lot more like what the Raptors do, where they give it the ball to their big and they run some off ball action and they play make. And Miami's been doing that for a long time with Bam and movement shooters like Tyler Herro and great cutters like Jimmy and whatever. Right. But like, the Raptors are now trying to do that too. And of course, like, in order to play that system, you're definitely going to need playmaking bigs. You're definitely going to need spacing and like, you know, really good catch and shoot 3-point shooters, ideally movement shooters like Grady as well. But at the same time, it's like, okay, the Raptors have now updated their offense to, you know, essentially the latest firmware in the NBA. Like, they finally, the Raptors were stuck on, like, I don't know, Windows Vista for a while. And now we're running, I don't even know what the latest Windows is these days. But, you know, whatever happened to 95 and then 98 and then 2000 and then XP and then, you know, what happened? In any case, they've updated their firmware. But, like, in order to make this style work, like, is the exact personnel, like, what are they giving up defensively? And I think this is probably a question that is asked around the league, like, you know, because the league has tilted so much in terms of in favor of offense. Like, you look at the Raptors, like, built the team's build, it is so predicated on offense, right? To the point where it's like, can you even reasonably expect these guys to be able to guard? That's a conversation I had with Blake today on the Raptors show as well. It's just like, okay, how, in order for the Raptors to avoid being in this position where they're 25-56 and they're going to be 25-57 to finish the year, in order to avoid repeating the situation, the number one thing the Raptors need to do is get to be good on offense. And the Raptors, to recap what I said on the show earlier today, the Raptors had 1 month this season, exactly one, where they were even better than average on defense. And that was in October. They were fourth on offense or defense. And they played four games that month. So that's just like a good week that they started the season off defensively. In November, they were 15th. In December, and don't forget, OG, it was only traded at the very end of December, right? It was already past Christmas at that point. OG was traded, I believe, on the 28th. The Raptors in November or in December were already 22nd on defense. And right now they're like one of the five worst defenses in the league. That's not a surprise to anybody. But this is not even like, okay, since the Raptors rebuilt, they suck on defense and you can't judge a team that's like playing Malik Williams, whatever. It's like, okay, I'm not doing that. But even when they did have good defenders, objectively good defenders, and the Raptors were really healthy to start the year before they hit a lot of injuries late in the year, they still sucked on defense. And now when you look at this lineup in particular, it's like, okay, you know, who is a plus defender in the group, right? You look at the starting lineup tonight, Kelly is not a plus defender. Gary is not a plus defender. Maybe an average defender, but generally speaking, not a plus defender. RJ is an average defender, sometimes even a little bit less than that. Quickly, you know, you look at he came with a good defensive profile from New York, but it's also like he was playing for Tom Thibodeau. Like, you know, if you don't guard, you're probably not going to play. So when the whole, like, essentially, like, quickly went to gifted class. Like, if you don't try hard in gifted class, everyone's just going to lap you and you're going to look silly, right? Like, so you got to try hard when you're in gifted class. But now he's been moved down to, like, you know, applied, defensively, at least, on the Raptors. Now it's okay. You know what? He's probably going to skip a couple steps. I wouldn't say quickly is a plus defender with the Raptors. I mean, you see the Heat, like, get in for easy duck-ins against him. The Raptors trying to hide against him. I would say he tries. And when he applies himself, he can, again, close to average. But, like, generally speaking, not a plus defender. Grady Dick, definitely not a plus defender in the current mold. And whatever, the rest of the guys, I mean, Ochai is a good defender. On the Miami, he wouldn't even stand out, really. But, like, you know, good defender overall in the Raptors. But that's it, right? So, like, yes, you can bring Scottie back in. Yes, you can bring Yaka back in. But, like, you are small and you are defensively not that solid. Now, of course, the good thing is you can coach up defense, because if we saw quickly play better defense in New York and not as good in Toronto, that means that he can play better defense. It's just a matter of the context around him, the team around him, the coaching around him, the culture around him. And I think that's where this is not a conversation for game 81. This is a conversation for the start of next year. There has to be a much bigger emphasis on defense. Yes, you've gotten better offensive players to play the style that Darko wants, which is a more updated style that's like relative to the rest of the league. Like, I would say it's not ahead of the curve for Toronto or for the rest of the league, but it is at least like we've now updated. We're not just playing like Fred Pascal Isoball, right? But at the same time, can you guard? And is there enough physicality for some of those guys to play that? And is there enough pride and want to from the whole group? And in games like this, you can clearly tell. Like, Miami is just on a different level. So much better offensively, so much better defensively. And you expect them to be. But at the same time, like, what is Miami right now? A play-in team. Like, what's the goal for the Raptors next year? To hopefully be a play-in team. Well, if you're even going to be in the same conversation, in the same room, you got to be remotely on the same level. So you got to really hammer that in for the offseason. Like, and for a lot of these guys, they can stand to get a lot stronger. Like, I would love to see quickly get stronger. I think, like, you know, that's a big limitation of his game. He gets pushed out of his spots a lot of the time and affects him on offense too. I think for Grady, you know, that's just naturally going to have to happen. He's got to get stronger, you know. And, you know, even these other guys, I mean, I don't know, Gary and RJ are already pretty, you know, I would say they're close to max. They're closer to maxed out, but like still, I just need to see a higher degree of defense from the group. I mean, that's not to say that like there aren't good things. Like, again, RJ was phenomenal tonight, and I've like every other Raptor fan, like everyone had like a bit of cautious optimism with RJ coming in, because it was like all you heard from New York was like, oh, he wasn't really that. And I've seen a lot of New York. Like, we just seen him in the playoffs. We've seen him, like, even, you know, two rounds last year against Miami as well. RJ, by the way, played really well in a lot of stretches in the playoffs. But, like, you looked at it, you're like, okay, the overall numbers, like, yeah, you know, that's not that strong, all that kind of stuff. But, like, put all that cautious optimism aside, every game you watch him and it's just a delight. He gets the basket so well. It is such a talent for him. Off of cuts, off of drives, off of semi-transition, off of pick and roll, he just gets to the basket. Like, and not only gets the basket, but he elongates his steps. He uses his strength. He obviously has a preferred hand with the left, but he does finish a decent amount with his right as well. It's not like he can't shoot with his right at all. He was missing some right-handed layups to start, but, like, you know, I think he's really, really settled in here. And he just goes to the basket over and over and over again. Like, RJ kind of has, like, almost, like, older Dwayne Wade type of game. Like, not young Dwayne Wade, who's, like, dunking on everybody. Like, I think he's not, like, that next level athletic. But, like, as Dwayne Wade got older, the footwork, all that kind of stuff. Now, Dwayne also, big, big difference. big, big difference is he had like a really, really elite mid-range game. He could hit fadeaways, pull-ups, even stretch it out to three to some degree, but just like, Dwayne RJ is not the strongest three-point shooter, but like Dwayne also had that counter as well. But still, like these like off-balance floaters, like all these kind of things, like, and just a remarkable first step to get to the basket, and then that strength as a guard too, and then also the length to elongate and switch up his finishes. I'm really impressed with RJ. I really, really am. And tonight, it's just, 35 points and 11 rebounds. He was the offense for Toronto. Like, nobody else was really even touching the paint. So just a really impressive game from RJ. So, I mean, it was another loss. I think these kind of just, like, just flow off your back at this point. We all know what it is. But, I think that, there are still some positive things to come out of the season with. I'm not one of those people that needs to just relentlessly look at the positives. That's ridiculous. Like you got to have some ability in your life to hold some discomfort. But at the same time, this, you got to acknowledge that the Raptors really, really got to improve defensively. Cause you're not going anywhere until you do that. And for all these young teams who have made jumps this year, it's all because they have gotten better defensively. Very few young teams in the league are like, oh, we figured out an offensively and now we're a super juggernaut. Like maybe just the Pacers, but like around the rest of the league, like, how did Orlando get to the top? Well, not only did they draft and get the right guys and pick a lot of lottery picks or whatever, but like they really turned themselves into elite defense, right? You look at the other young teams that have taken over OKC this year. What's one of the big reasons? They turned themselves into a phenomenal defensive team. In addition to, having Shea and having that type of talent, right? You look at, some of the other young teams who have risen this year, New Orleans, I haven't said like risen, but we're still like they improved a lot defensively. How did Houston go like 20 plus 20 in terms of wins from last year? Because they started playing defense and they brought in a coach that really hammers in the no excuses on defense. And of course, they improved their personnel to some degree, like Fred and Dylan Brooks and Jeff Green. Those are like really good vets, but like 20 wins, that's the whole team lifting itself up. So I think I would love to see the Raptors like put that emphasis in. But anyway, that's for next year. Right now, there's another game, and then we'll be out. But before I get to the three stars, a message from our sponsor. Are you ready to get fired up for the next game? Nothing helps more than a bowl of Campbell's new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Let me tell you, it's got tons of seasoned chicken, veggies, and noodles all in a tasty spicy broth. So it'll fill you up and get you fired up. So take your day to the next level and see if you can handle the heat with the new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Okay, your three stars for game 81. First star is obviously RJ, 35 and 11 in 33 minutes. Super efficient. Very happy for him. Second star, I will go with quickly. 15 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists. I thought the Heat did a really good job physically, like limiting him, getting to his spots, also providing good help at the basket. I just thought even when quickly did get to the hoop, they provided some really good contests. And, you saw quickly have to stretch and go really fast. And, I think, he just does. You compare quickly's drives versus RJ's drives. RJ is like absorbing the contact and then getting to a spot, whereas quickly is like almost shying away from the contact. And when the contact comes, it definitely moves him away from getting to his spot. So not to say quickly can't drive and score and create a lot of offense. We've seen lots of games like that. But against the more physical teams, it's going to be a real struggle for him because he is kind of like a twig, And then your third star, I'll give it to Bruce. I thought Bruce Brown actually played really well off the bench. 14 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. He would fit really nicely in Miami. He would fit a lot nicely in a lot of teams, honestly. He's a talented player, and he's a tough player too. It's just a matter of can you make the right trade. So hopefully the Raptors can do that this year, whether it's at the draft or, whatever. It's just in the offseason. I do feel like Bruce is very much wasted here in Toronto. Your Gerald Henderson Award winner, you can go a lot of different places with this one. It's got to be Jaime Hawkins Jr., although I really did want to give it to Nikola Jovic. He really was just killing it, but like, Hawkins, 20 points, 4 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals, a block, 7 of 15 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3, 4 of 4 from the foul line. Yeah, he's, I think, what was the story? Like, he like really copied a lot of his game after Jimmy Butler. Like, you can see a little bit of that for sure. But that guy's tough, man. And of course, like, he should be. Like, how old is he as a rookie? Like I'm going to look him up again. He's an old rookie, right? Yeah, he's 23 years old. How are you 23 as a rookie? That's wild, man. This looks like a Jorge Garbajosa-style rookie, man. This guy's got a mortgage. He came into the league with a mortgage. Not student loans, but a mortgage. That's crazy. This guy got a good credit score, man. He's making payments. But, yeah, seriously, Hawkins was awesome tonight. And, you know, the Heat, I'm interested to see what they do in the playoffs. I can't help but admire what they have done in the playoffs. I think they've earned everybody's admiration in that way. Yeah, I mean, if they get matched up with a team like, what would be the most fun matchup? I would love to see them versus Milwaukee for a third time, especially since they were the ones heavily involved in the Damian Lillard sweepstakes. And obviously, Milwaukee swooped in there and got Dame. To see them play against Milwaukee, especially Milwaukee as of right now in this current second, with Giannis being like, you know, iffy health-wise with the calf injury, and also just how much strife the Bucks have gone through this whole entire season. I think the Bucks played tonight, and did they lose? Let me look it up. I'm not gonna lie, I was I'm actually kind of excited to not be so tied up with Raptors games. Obviously, I'm gonna miss Raptors games, but like, you know, I'm also really looking forward to being able to have, you know, my evenings free to watch other hoops as well. Like, I'm watching Warriors versus Pelicans right now. It's a pretty good matchup. In the background here. But yeah, okay, Bucks lose again tonight to the Thunder. I mean, that's not a surprise. They don't have Giannis. But like, yeah, I mean, Heat versus Milwaukee right now, that might be a toss. That might be a toss up, you know. And so I'm looking forward to seeing the playoffs. But anyway, thanks everyone for listening. Obviously, I made the announcement today that I'm going to be leaving the Raptors show after three seasons. To be clear, I will still be doing, obviously, the React Pod for Game 82. And then that will be on Sunday. And of course, there will be the two episodes next week to address sort of the close out the season, locker room cleanouts. You know, hopefully Masai speaks. We can react to some of those as well. But just in general, like, yeah, I've made that decision myself. I know I've seen it is weird to be at a point in life where, you know, just because of the scope of the job and very fortunate to have a large audience with the show, there's like some speculation and things like that. Like, I just want to address a couple things, quite frankly. Number one, like, this is entirely my decision to leave. This is not, there was not pressure. This is not, the show didn't do well and I got squeezed out. I've been really fully supported by Sportsnet this entire way. And I don't think it's entirely fair to not to the company itself, because whatever, but like to the people involved, even in management. Like, this is my own personal decision. I saw an opportunity to make the show that I really wanted, to own the show that I really wanted. And, you know, yeah, like, that's the opportunity I'm pursuing. But that's my own decision. I was not pushed. It was not anything like that. In fact, in this business, it's actually really rare that people in my position even get to choose. So I'm seeing that as a privilege, as an opportunity. I just wanted to dispel that first and foremost. This is not, this is definitely not, no, nobody forced me to say this. Like, I'm genuinely saying this from the heart. But the other thing too, I also saw like a lot of just feedback in general, or, you know, things that were commented towards Blake. And I'm not here to tell you like what you should enjoy or not enjoy, or, you know, just whatever, right? But at the same time, I don't think it's fair, you know, for some of those comments to be, you know, just so heavily against Blake. I think that, you know, me as his friend, we've had these conversations, and of course that's going to stay with, you know, between us privately. But at the same time, I can also tell you that, like, it's not easy, you know. He definitely sees it. I've talked about it before as well, just like sort of accepting feedback and seeing it. Of course, like, there's an element to accepting feedback where it's like you got to just be able to take it and really, you know, try to use it and adapt to it. But at the same time, like, it's not entirely fair. Like, I don't think Blake was put into, you know, this position to do anything other than to try to be himself, to try to bring his very best to the show. This is a guy who's like incredibly dedicated to Raptors coverage. Anybody who's followed the Raptors basically in the last decade would know that, right? And you know, I think that, yeah, you compare pretty much, I don't know, man, you could compare most podcasters. I don't think they have the kind of chemistry that me and Alex have, but that can't be the just standard for everything. You know, that's like saying that, like, no team's good because they don't have the chemistry of Steph, Clay, and Draymond. Like, that's, you know, I'm not even trying to compare myself to that. I'm just saying that, like, you know, it's just too specific of a standard. But I think Blake brought his very best to the show, and I would hate to see that not appreciated in within the context of just his efforts. I know he definitely has like a specific style that he brings, and that's like me. I have a very specific style that I bring as well. So just want to, you know, say that on behalf of my friend as well. And lastly, this is something that I'm going to circle back to, because basically at this point I'm starting to get overwhelmed pretty much after answering like about five messages. I think that's where I'm averaging right now, like five messages at a time. I get really overwhelmed. I get so, you know, this is such a deeply personal thing that I do. And I know I share a lot of sort of myself into this project. And I've done that always in the podcast. But because it's so deeply personal, it's so emotionally rewarding and so touching to see this just like incredible outpour of support. And I'm going to try to get back to everybody. It is so important to me to stay engaged with everyone, to hear your feedback, to hear your ideas, to hear what you've enjoyed, and just to kind of like share and reciprocate the type of love I've received. But it's been overwhelming. And there are obviously a lot of comments. And, you know, I think that the number one takeaway from everybody is just like, I feel really proud to have done this. And you know, I know that this program is very unique. I know it's very different from other Sportsnet programs. I know that even just me personally, you know, culturally, I'm also quite, you know, unique and distinct. And I think that that informs what it is. And it's also informs the reaction to the content I make in the first place. But it's been so great. And if you don't hear back from me, it's just because I'm taking my time with it and try to process it as much as I can. My head is already quite big, as you know, so after all these compliments, it's somehow going to get even bigger. But I just want to say thank you so much. Like it's I'm so proud of the show. I'm so proud of like what we were able to accomplish here, and to see that reflected and appreciated in these specific moments just means the world to me. So thanks everyone for listening to the Raptors Reaction Podcast. And yeah, you've been listening to the Raptors Reaction Podcast, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. I'll be back Sunday, and then Monday, and then Tuesday. See you then.